Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show. This is the Champions League review slash weekend review. I'm your host, Tosin. As always, next to me is Dean. How are you doing today?
I am well. How are you, brother?
I'm good. We're missing Coach, but, you know, he's got other things to take care of.
What other things? Fucking piece of shit. Like, why is he not here? I know why he isn't here. Let me tell you guys why he's not here. One, he doesn't love you, listeners. That's why. He doesn't love you like I love you. And second, London is a scummy town filled with Qatari investment, just like Paris. He's out there collecting his bribes from the Malams that just won the Champions League. But let's talk. Let's do this.
Oh, man. Champions League final. That game. I have a lot of thoughts, a lot of reactions. I'm going to let Dean talk first. Let him get his initial takes off when we get in depth about what we want to talk about. But go ahead, Dean. How do you feel, your initial reaction, seeing everything yesterday?
As I've long revealed on this great podcast of ours, I'm low key an Inter fan on the side. Okay, like I have my reasons. Growing up, a lot of the football we got to watch in Lagos, Nigeria, when we had power, was Italian Serie A. So I picked a team, and I picked a team that had a Nigerian, actually multiple Nigerians, in Nwankwo Kwakanu and Taribo West, and that was Inter. And that's how I became an Inter guy. But over the years, Arsenal has sort of surpassed that fandom. But I've always had a soft spot for Inter. And I have to say, that was fucking humiliating. That was embarrassing. I had to turn it off at 3-0. It was just too much to watch. It was a failure on every possible level. Because we don't watch finals. Like, finals aren't played out like that. Finals aren't supposed to be like that. Like, I can't remember a Champions League final feeling that one-sided since, I want to say,
United
Barcelona. Yeah. I was always going to bring that up. But yeah, and before that, I want to say Real Madrid Valencia, the 3-0. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the first, like, big final I remember thinking to myself, like, huh, that didn't go the way I expected it to go, you know. So I, for one, as I said on the preview pod, I expected Inter to actually win. I figured the desperation of the situation, them being the older team, having the experience from, you know, two seasons ago when they also gave a Champions League title to another scummy-supported team in Manchester City. I just figured they had everything working for them from a sort of motivational standpoint. But ultimately, it doesn't matter what your motivation is if you don't have legs. It doesn't matter what your motivation is if you're playing against players that are just more talented than you. And I think that game was just a confluence of every sort of failure that a team can suffer in a final game ever. Like, they failed tactically. Inzaghi has his sins to apologize to me personally for. They failed physically. They just didn't have the legs to keep up. I saw Mkhitaryan looking really tired in that game. I saw Barella, who's an Energizer Bunny type player, looking really tired in that game. But I feel like I'm yapping a bit too much. Tosin, you had something to say.
Yes, I saw DeMarco's ball swat get bigger as each minute went on.
You're not wrong, because I was going to pick on him specifically a little later. But yeah, it was just, and forgetting the age aspect of it, there's also, and this, again, I'm going to bring Arsenal up because that's my main team. But a big part of the reason why PSG-Arsenal played out the way it did was because Arsenal did not have their players, and PSG had their players. Okay, Gabriel was missing, Havertz was missing, Gabriel Jesus missing. You know, that stuff piles up. You know, over the season, you play more games by just having a smaller squad. And PSG, at the time they faced Arsenal, were missing nobody in their squad. Like, literally not a single injury. That stuff matters. And it was the same thing in this game against Inter. We had a Lautaro that did his hamstring in the semifinal against Barcelona. We had Benjamin Pavard come in on the right center back zone, replacing Bissek, but he hasn't played for a month. DeMarco, that we're going to make fun of profusely, has been in and out of the team with injuries. You know, then you add the age to that, and PSG, they also played the perfect game. This was not all about Inter's flaws, not even close. PSG, very talented team, very fantastic team, but at the end of the day, I think a lot of this speaks to the larger themes of the tournament for me, Tosin. I just feel like in today's game, given all the conversations and articles and everything we talk about, injuries and fitness and health and depth and the schedule. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the teams that have won most of these competitions this season are teams that were healthy, that had some depth, that could change games from the bench. Those are the teams that won all the competitions this year.
Yeah, and I mean, when you have a team where, you know, Lee Kangin didn't even play, Bradley Barcola came out when it was 3-0. You know, you have Sonny Maloya, who's a talented academy kid coming off the bench. It's, you know, Kimpembe didn't even play, you know. And it's just one of these things where you look talent-wise, PSG just has a lot of talent, and they're young talent on top of that. You know, the young talent, and I thought PSG were going to win. You know, on the preview, I said they were going to win 2-1. I just felt PSG had a little bit more to them. I just didn't think it was going to be this bad. I think this is probably the worst Champions League final score we've seen ever. But, yeah, man, that was embarrassing.
Yeah, it was. It was. And I think it started with the tactics. It's weird to criticize a manager that got his team to basically every final and the last day of the Serie A season in Simone Inzaghi. But naturally, a 3-5-2 against a 4-3-3, it can definitely work. It's worked for Inter several times. I mean, they beat Barcelona, who played in a 4-3-3. But the thing about that formation is that it naturally forces the opposition out wide. That's the whole point of a 3-5-2. You want to force the opposition out wide and trap them on the sideline. The problem is that PSG's 4-3-3 is specifically designed to take advantage of wide overloads. You know, they double up with their fullbacks. Vitinha drops into defense on the left side like Toni Kroos used to do for Real Madrid. Then from there, he can play make. He drops in as part of the back three. Nuno Mendes moves forward, double teams with Kvaratskhelia on whoever the fullback is or the wide center back is. Same thing on the other side. Hakimi and who's out there? Doué. It was Doué today. They double team on DeMarco on the other side. You know, then Dembele goes wherever he wants, and he's a reference for everybody, and they just rearrange positions around him as the false nine. So there's always space in the middle for somebody to fill, somebody new to fill. And Inzaghi kind of set his team up unprepared for that. It just felt as if PSG did the same thing against Liverpool that they did against Arsenal for their goals in both ties, for the first goal in the Arsenal tie and for the goal that Dembele scored against Liverpool, I think at Anfield that was the first goal. And for Inzaghi to have that much reconnaissance, that much information in front of him, and to not reinforce his wide areas a bit more was really frustrating. I felt my solution would have been, and I'm not an expert coach or anything, I know they played two up top in Lautaro and Marcus Thuram, but I think one of those guys, whoever's better on the ball, probably Lautaro, and I don't know how fit he was, but he probably should have dropped into midfield a little bit more than allowed one of the midfielders to go wide more often. Yeah. Ultimately, what ended up happening was that they just dropped too deep as PSG started creating chances and, you know, putting the pressure on. And you know what? I should have started with this. The press, the PSG press was insane.
Woo!
You know, we're going to say some unflattering things about PSG, but the one thing I can't question is Ousmane Dembele's dedication to what they achieved yesterday. Like, he gave Sommer no time on the ball. Like, when Inter have the ball, they build up like a lot of the, I mean, they play like a lot of other teams when they have the ball. They also have very interesting rotations with their back three and their midfielders. But the problem is that they need to start with regular buildup, and they never had time to really start with that regular buildup. Every time Bastoni or one of the other defenders got the ball, everyone ahead of them was marked. So, and the other option is to give it to your goalkeeper to lump it long to someone like Thuram to bring it down, or Lautaro, who's pretty physical himself, to bring it down. But he could never do that accurately because Dembele was on his ass the whole game. And that press was dialed in the entire game. Inter never really had a hold on the game at any point.
No. Do you know when I knew Inter lost? It's maybe the first 10 minutes. I saw Simone Inzaghi take off his suit jacket. I was like, oh, yeah, this game is cooked. Like, he took his suit jacket off, and I was like, oh, man, they mama'd his Mia. That's what that man lost his mind yesterday. I was like, this game is cooked.
I think one of the more unknown things about people who don't watch Serie A on a regular basis is just how often, and I'm not saying you don't, I know you do, but how intense Inzaghi can be. He's never in his in the coach's box. He takes that jacket off quite often. He yells a lot. He mamas a lot of Mias. You know, he's one of those guys. Like, in England, they'd be treating him like they treat Arteta and Nicolas Rivera or whatever. You know, but he's a fun character to watch. But when he took that jacket off, I thought he saw what I was seeing and was trying to change it. But they didn't really change it. And maybe it was just one of the things, because there was a very interesting, well, I don't know how interesting it is to the listeners, but it was interesting to me, a stat that says the score of the first goal has won now 10 of the last 11 Champions League finals. So the first goal makes such a difference in a one-off game, you know.
Yep.
Because essentially what happened was that based on those wide overloads we've talked about already, people overreacted to Kvaratskhelia. Probably an unfit Benjamin Pavard needed more help than necessary. The team dropped too far back. There were too many people on the left side of the pitch. Vitinha has all the time in the world to pick a pass to Doué. Great run from him. He passes it in. If, Hakimi doesn't finish that goal, Dembele is free on the outside of him to finish the goal. The overload was so successful that literally everyone in a yellow shirt, ugly yellow shirt, by the way, looking like a whack-ass Dortmund, was on the wrong side of the pitch. The overload, swing it over. Textbook coaching goal. Like, Enrique would have been so pleased to see that goal. And after that, what does Inter have to do to get back in the game? They have to press forward. They have to go forward. They tried to go forward. Barella, one of the most energetic players in Europe, he's tired. He's trying to win a corner. Fails to win the corner. Like, this is something you see players do all the time. In a final, he fails to win a corner. Kvara wins the ball, plays it up to Dembele. Dembele runs it up the pitch, crosses it over, do a shot, deflects off DiMarco again. Well, DiMarco, who was keeping everyone onside for the first goal, which is why I was mad at him. He deflects off him for the second goal because he tries to turn. He doesn't stay big. 2-0. At that point, we all know the game is over. We all know. Because this wasn't the Inter we saw against Barcelona.
No. By the way, I will have to say shout out to William Pacho on that attempt because he's the one that cleared it all the way up. Because the reason why I remember is because I was like, why is this nigga wearing number 51?
I'm assuming the reason why you remember is because you watched the game.
That and also because why is he wearing number 51? That's what was on my mind.
Hey, man, I'm sure the answer is somewhere in Ecuador. And he's the first Ecuadorian to win this competition, apparently. Good for them. Which I suppose isn't shocking. There haven't been a lot of great Ecuadorian legends in the... I mean, like, the guy at Chelsea is probably the best Ecuadorian to ever be in Europe, to be honest with you.
And not too much on Antonio Valencia now.
Listen, man, when he was dark-skinned, I was fucking with him. Now that he's light-skinned, I'm not fucking with him. It's that simple. But yeah, you know, the game just basically followed the template of every game. Like, when two teams are about, you know, equally matched and one team gets the advantage with the goal, then gets the second goal on the counter, all you got to do is just wait for the spaces to open up. Because the other team, in a one-off game, the other team has to try to win the game. And when Inter came out for the second half, they pressed up, tried to be a little more energetic, and it was a disaster from jump. At no point was that tactical change, that aggression in the press, going to serve them well. Because either they got counterattacked on, or PSG just played through them in such a casual way that it looked like a counterattack.
Yeah. And then when Bissek came on and then got hurt.
Yeah, that was a wrap right there. Because he was coming on for a guy that hadn't played in a month in, Benjamin Pavard. So for him to come on as a replacement and get hurt within, it wasn't even 5 minutes. Like, he went off and I was like, yeah, this is over. But I want to ask you, Tosin, do you think, you know, like when Barcelona destroyed you guys all those years ago and Messi scored that header, apparently his favorite goal in his career, that's hilarious. But from that point on, everyone kind of accepted that this is the new meta of the sport. This is a tactical approach that we're going to try to replicate to become good teams. And to a certain extent, we've sort of seen that extend till now, really, I'd say, because the team that just won the Champions League in PSG is a positional play team, even if they're very much more fluid than a lot of the Pep teams we've seen. But do you think this fluid version of a very talented PSG team that's been put together with billions of pounds is going to be the next most influential style of playing the game?
Yes and no. Really just depends on your players. Like, that's really all I can say in football. It's like, it really just depends on who your players are. Like, I understand everyone wants to copy it, but do you have a Kvara? Do you have a Doué? Do you have a Dembele? Do you have a Vitinha? Do you have a, you know, do you have these sort of profiles of players? Because that's what's making this team tick. Like, yes, we understand how sexy it looks, but let's call a spade. They have a whole bunch of talented players, right? You can try and mimic it all you want. Like, I saw United fans saying yesterday, oh, 3-5-2 is dead. It's like, well, it really just depends on your talent, man. Like, that's... Again, like, not to bring up Arsenal, but I hate the way people talk about Arsenal. Like, that's a very talented team who, once they get their players, that's going to look like a whole new entire team. So, really, to me, it's like, yes, tactics can change and whatever. Like, you know, football, there's nothing new under the sun. We've seen it all. We've seen it all, like, you know, like we were saying the other day, Bastoni and Beckenbauer, there's, you know, there's so many similarities of, like, if you go back. Like, I saw this game from, like, 92, like, a Red Star team versus Milan. And, like, you can kind of see, like, oh, this looks like you could put it in 2025 and nothing looks different. Right. So, for me, it just really depends on your talent. Like, it depends on your talent and depends on your coach. Because Luis Enrique, for as much as Man United fans were, like, trying to ride on him and saying, like, oh, we love Enrique, he's another stubborn man who doesn't change his formation. Like, there's a reason why Roma and him fell out. Because, like, I want that 4-3-3, and that's what I want to do. You know, right. So, you know, it really just depends on your talent. But it is going to be sort of a framework for a lot of teams. They're like, okay, I want to take some things from here and put it here, you know? So
Yeah, I guess ultimately to me, I just don't think, like you said, it's nothing new, you know? So I don't understand people watching what they saw yesterday. I mean, I get being impacted by how dramatic the score was. But ultimately, we're not watching anything new. We're just watching something we've seen for the past 15, 20 years done with really good profiles. That's what it is. We saw this man win a treble with Messi, Neymar, and Luis Suarez. Those profiles are just different. In Suarez, you have like more of a pure nine, so he's not playing false per se, but he can hold the ball up. He has technique. He can dribble from deep. You know, so it wasn't that different. Like, it was a lot of, back then, it was a lot of Barcelona, and I remember their fans complaining at the time, like, oh, we're playing too fast. We're bypassing our midfield. That's not the Barcelona way, but they won a treble, you know. So it's sort of a similar thing with This PSG midfield is like the most functional but technically gifted midfield you could find. Because at the end of the day, Enrique doesn't really want them to have the ball too much. You know, they're just there to circulate the ball and get it to, as coach would call them, the rockets as quickly as possible. And speaking of the rockets, Desiré Doué had a hell of a game, Tosin.
Neymar's child. One of funniest things I love after the game, he went to Marcelo. I was like, hey, can you tell Neymar about me? Like, tell Neymar, say hi. He said, I already told Neymar to follow you and message you. And it was really cool to see, like, Neymar has sons while he's still active playing. So, but we've known about Doué.
Okay, active playing. Okay, good joke.
But we talked about this. We've talked about Doué since he was at Rennes, since he was 17 years old. We saw it, like, when he was at Rennes. So, for me, this is not shocking. It's a very talented player. So, he just had his moment, and he took his moment and ran with it. And that's a very special player. So, very happy for Doué.
Did he end up winning player of the match?
He did.
Okay, good for him. But, yeah. Honestly, I'm pretty sure if you ask Enrique, I haven't really watched a lot of the interviews because there was a lot of saccharine stuff we're going to get into in a bit that I did not want to expose myself to. But I'm pretty sure that if you asked Luis Enrique who the player of the game was, he would have said Dembele. Because, again, that pressing on the goalkeeper, Jesus.
Can I have a little soliloquy on Dembele?
No, you may not.
I saw yesterday, I said, I think Dembele wins Ballon d'Or. And someone was like, he's not even a top five player on his team. I was like, yes, he is. It's like, let's stop lying. Dembele's a very special player. And we've known he's been great. You know, like, we've known his talent since Rennes. Again, another Rennes player. It's just he just needed to mature. And it goes back to, like, you know, what we were saying about football. Like, not everybody's progress is linear, right? You know, some people have to take detours to get to where they're going. Like, he had that big money move to Barcelona, didn't work out for him. Obviously, he started at Dortmund. But he went to PSG and he bought in. Like, there's a video that went viral about Enrique talking to Mbappe about pressing and say, you have to run like a son of a bitch, right? Remember, that's that viral video.
Yeah.
Dembele's really bought into what Enrique's selling. And it's just about maturity, right? Like, everyone matures at different stages of their lives. Not everyone's going to mature at a certain age. Some people have been a grown man since they were 12 years old, Granit Xhaka. There's some people who mature in their 30s. Some people don't mature until their 40s and 50s. Dembele's finally becoming a man. He got married, put down the PlayStation, become a man, and you can see in the way that he's playing. So I'm very happy for Dembele to finally become the player that he is. So he, to me, should win Ballon d'Or. I think he's had an amazing season. I think that he's been a catalyst for PSG, and they've won a treble, a quadruple, actually. We're going to, you know, be factually correct. And, hey, he's done his thing, man. I'm very happy for Dembele.
Yeah, it's difficult to disagree with that. I think, you know, he wasn't quite the front runner for me because of the league he plays in. But at the end of the day, in the competition that included everybody that's a contender for this trophy, he lasted to the end. He was the last man standing. So for me, he leapfrogs everybody. But you make an interesting point about Dembele and Doué, and just, we talk about coaches, we talk about tactics a lot, but ultimately this sport is always going to be about players. It's always been about the players. It will always be about the players, okay? And it's interesting, like, with PSG, up until January of this year, they weren't, even though they were going to win the league at a canter, because, again, they're the most dominant team, in Europe at this point, but in France, definitely, by far, they weren't playing at their best. Dembele and Luis Enrique were not on the best of terms. I remember when they came to the Emirates in the Champions League, mm-hmm. He didn't play in that game because I can't remember. Him and Enrique had some sort of beef. And a lot of that beef had to do with his system. You know, it was a little too rigid. And, you know, people are saying things like, okay, we're playing a 4-3-3, but as we move up the phases of the pitch, we're going to convert to a three at the back. Why is one of those three Nuno Mendes? This is a guy that overlaps like a demon, can underlap like a demon. Like, why is he part of that back three? Why not put one of the less talented, well, not necessarily less talented, but the profile suggests that someone like Vitinha is a better fit in that back three to play passes to people, as opposed to Nuno Mendes, who is a super athlete, can get up and down the field, provide the overloads that would help Kvaratskhelia, you know. So eventually he listened to his players and his system became less rigid, became more fluid, and ultimately everybody won. You know, we're going to get a Ballon d'Or win out of the squad. We're going to, you know, they won everything, every competition they were in this season. You know, so ultimately players truly determine what the tactics are.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, like, I, again, not to bring up my team, and I hate doing this, like, when we both bring up our teams, but it's like, that's the example that we know, right? So I look at my team, for example, right? Like, what can you do when your striker can't hold up the ball? What can you do when your midfielders can't pass the ball? You know, it's like, yes, we understand tactics matter. Yes, tactics are important in any sport. We know that. But at the end of the day, you need players. You need very good players who buy into what the coach is selling. And that's what you call culture. And that's why PSG, I remember when they played against Arsenal early in the year last year, they got smacked. They didn't look like this PSG, but that's what happens when the players...
I would also like to make the point that every time we play them, we smack them on XG, you know. Hey, war a trophy. I know, war a trophy. I just want to say. And yeah, we're the only ones to do it. I just want to say it. Arteta is coming for you niggas, man. He's coming. Okay.
Yeah, so, and it's just, I look at it and it's just like, this is a very talented PSG team, right? Like, you have Desiree Doué, who is one of the best teenagers in the world. You have Kvaratskhelia, who is one of the best left wingers or whatever position he wants to play at the time in the world. Dembele, who we've known about since Rennes, right? We've known about these guys. Vitinha, who struggled in the Premier League, is a very talented player. João Neves is another player who was a £100 million player reportedly at the time. Fabian Ruiz has always been a talented player. We saw at Napoli, and like he finally is like clicking. So it's just like Marquinhos has been there forever. You know, they have talent everywhere. They have arguably two of the best fullbacks in the world in, you know, Nuno Mendes and Hakimi. Then they also have a really good goalkeeper. So your spine of your team is really good. Then you have a coach who is really good as well. So, and it's just right timing. So it's just like, yes, I understand tactics matter. But at the end of the day, it's all about the talent.
Yeah, and the talent that PSG have was not acquired cheaply, okay? No. Like, just because they're likable and just because they're young doesn't mean that a lot of the stuff that we're hearing in the post-game interviews and seeing in the articles that people are probably reading in between listening to our podcast is the route we should be going. I don't want to be the moral arbiter for the universe, but this is still a team that is bankrolled by a nation state, okay? Like, most of the teams that we support cannot compete with that, okay? They're doing their best to compete, but just technically, if it's just bag for bag, we're not competing with that. I read something about the PSG starting 11 in yesterday's game only had two players that cost less than 50 million. The goalkeeper who came for free, which means that they're paying him a shit ton of money in salary and wages, that's Donnarumma, and I believe Fabian Ruiz did not cost 50 million. Everybody else cost at least 50 million.
And I want to add to that point where, because I talked about this yesterday on my personal Twitter. I understand they spend a lot of money, but also some of these teams spend money stupidly. And I understand, like PSG, they send out Randall Colomwani. They have a whole number nine and Goncalo Ramos on the bench. Like, yes, they have a crazy amount of money they spent to get to where they're at, right? But it's just, this is the game, man. Like, it's unfortunate that this is where football is, but we're a day late and a dollar short. You know,
it doesn't mean that we don't have to comment about it. That's the one thing. Like,
For sure. But like when Roman was running around all crazy with Chelsea, when the Glazers did a leverage buyout, we let the cat out the bag a long time ago.
This is true. But some of us have been bitching the whole time. Some of us are children of Arsene Wenger. Some people told us that we were broke. That would be people like you, you prick. But you know, whatever. United fans, I remember what you motherfuckers used to say. Now we're all fucked. How about that? You
know. Hey. Since I was 15 years old, been
saying we can't verify it. I'm just going to tar you with the same brush I tar all Man United fans with. You people know nothing about football and you're all terrible people. that are glory hunters and support players that flip their fans off in Asia. Disgusting culture of a club. Ugh. Hey,
ugh. I grew up on a player who kicked a fan at Selhurst Park, and I'm proud of it.
See, you guys are scum. Always been scum. You guys don't like culture. You like winning. That's all you like. Well, let me ask you this then. Inter, they essentially got to the finish line in every competition they entered this season and won nothing. Mm-hmm. Is there a season of failure?
Yes, and yeah. I mean, they went 0-3. They went goose egg. No Italian Cup, no Scudetto, no Champions League, and it's looking like Inzaghi's gone.
So who had a better season, Inter or AC Milan?
Nobody.
No, you got to answer the question, man.
Inter did.
Why? Their season was a failure, how is their season better than AC Milan's? They won a cup, right?
AC Milan finished ninth.
In the league?
Yes.
Damn. So what is the conclusion from your statements? Like, if you combine those statements, like, Inter lost in every final and their season was probably a failure since they might end up losing their coach, Saudi Arabia, I think you should go get that bag. Because at some point, you need money. He's been squeezing water out of rocks for years, okay? Like, playing a... How does Henrik Mkhitaryan? That nigga older than me.
I think he is. I generally think he's almost... I think he's almost 50.
He's 58. Okay, boom. How you going to win a Champions League with a 50-year-old? Like, go ahead and make some Saudi money, come back, there'll be a job waiting for you in 2-3 years, you know. Go make that money. Right. But if their season's a failure and Milan, who actually won something, finished ninth in the league, how's a failed season better than a season where somebody won something? What are we saying then?
My brother in Christ, I'm so glad you said this, because I've been trying to formulate this as an article. I've been trying to formulate this as a tweet, and I'm going to try and do a stream of consciousness right now. I think a lot of football fans love trophies to validate themselves and banter online when you can't take a look at the bigger picture, right? And I'm a professional Arsenal hater. I've said this a million times. I think Arsenal had one of the best seasons. Though I think what Mikel Arteta has done at Arsenal is actually underrated. I don't think people understand what he has built at Arsenal. So when people bunt at Arsenal, like, oh, Tottenham won a trophy, this team won a trophy, you're not doing well. Arsenal a consistent top 4 team, right? They're consistently going to be in Champions League. They consistently fight for the Premier League title. They consistently fight for the big titles, right? A Carabao Cup is not going to validate Mikel Arteta's what he's done to rebuild Arsenal. An FA Cup's not going to do that. The Champions League and the Premier League will add to that. So all these nonsensical jokes about, oh, Arsenal finished second and Tottenham did this, congratulations. Who the fuck cares? Because I don't care about that. I care about consistency. I remember when Sir Alex was at United, the lowest we ever finished was third, right? Now we're finishing 16th, 15th, and niggas talk about, oh, we should have won Europa League. No, I don't give a damn about winning Europa League. That doesn't validate how bad the season was. What you measured it on is how well you did in your league. That is a true barometer of success, is how well did you do in your league. Yes, you can win a Champions League, but Champions League is sometimes luck of the draw. It depends on your injuries and all of that. But how well have you consistently been in your league shows me. But I'm saying Inter failed because they had high ambitions, right? This is a team who won a league title. It's a team who's been to Champions League final. So they failed on that part. But in the grand scheme of things, no, they didn't fail. They're a top 14. They're going to Champions League next year. I remember when Inter post-Jose. I remember the Inter after Jose Mourinho left. I know what Inter was when they rebuilt. Inzaghi and Conte have built this team up to a place where they're consistently in the top 4. So, long story short, what I'm going to say is shut the fuck up in 2025. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, that said, I do think in one respect, it's definitely a failure, because I think if they had won this trophy, then it would have validated the season. It would have made all the efforts feel worthy. Mm-hmm. Then you could have justified running it back.
Yeah.
As things stand, I don't think they can run it back. Even if Inzaghi decides to stay, I don't think they can run it back, because it's like he can just point to, like, I did the best I could with this squad, and it just ended up being one of the most painful seasons in the history of fandom. Okay, this is basically Leverkusen back in there. Remember the Leverkusen season where they came second in every competition?
Yes.
Then Bayern bought Michael Ballack after? Yes. Jesus. It was awful. You know, so this is sort of the Italian version of that, and it's unfortunate. Real quick, though. What do you think? We've talked about this a little bit, the whole QSI aspect. And, you know, again, compliments to all the players. Luis Enrique, fantastic manager. Glad to see that. This is something that was great for his legacy. I still don't know how I feel about him as being one of the best managers ever, because every time he succeeded, it's been with a Pep-level team. You know, like, I think there are certain managers that have achievements where they, you know, like Ancelotti, for instance, has won things with really good teams and with less good teams, you know. Sir Alex did the same thing. You know, we've seen Wenger do the same thing. Certain managers only ever seem to win when they have inarguably the best team. So I don't know how I feel about him from a legacy ranking standpoint, but where would you place him at this point? Two trebles ain't nothing to sniff at.
I mean,
it's him and Pep. That's it for two trebles.
I would say he's top 10. I would say that. He's around there. We have to. I mean, two trebles is nothing to sniff at, man.
That's
that no be beans, man. Like, even Pep, like, I know we banter Pep and call him bald all the time, but man, hey.
Yeah, we didn't call him a loser. We just called him bald. that's not banter. That's just stating a fact. Yeah, like, that's not banter. He's bald. You know. Yeah. I've generally enjoyed watching his teams. Almost like, again, as a child of Wenger, that's almost a barometer for me. It's like, how well do your teams play and win? You know, like, Mourinho is one of the most successful managers ever. I did not enjoy watching most of his teams. I just didn't. Never did. No matter what they were winning. I did like the Real Madrid team that overtook Barcelona in La Liga. That team was good. Some of the Chelsea teams were okay, just attacking wise. But for the most part, I've never really enjoyed watching Mourinho teams. Like, Inter winning a treble with Mourinho, a lot of that shit was ugly. A lot of it was ugly. I ain't like it.
Even when we had Mourinho against Ajax in the Europa League, I want to poke my eyes out.
Oh, that was awful. That was awful. But did you guys win that on penalties, or was it like a one goal win or something?
Andre Onana was in goal. What do you think?
I see. Hey, man, Onana was good for Inter. That's the Onana I know. All right, man. One last thing. What do you think is, I mean, leaving the media stuff out of it, what do you think is behind this urge? You know, we've seen a lot of stuff trying to portray PSG as these likable underdogs, and I'm like, no, they're owned by the second richest nation state involved in the sport. Like, what are we talking about here, man? Like, what is this urge to, like, make them cute? Like, I don't get it. Why can't this be a really good team that finally won after spending billions of dollars?
I'm going to put it in italics, culture. PSG are cool. They got the Jordan brand. They got the Dembele. You know, they got all the cool players. They got the Duets of the world. You know, they got the sexiness. And everybody hates Mbappe now for some reason. So now Mbappe's gone, everyone's like, see, we're going to beat him with a stick. I saw Bill Simmons team about Mbappe. I'm like, yo, chill out. Like, we're doing too much. We're doing too much about Mbappe now. Like,
yeah, let's play our lanes, please.
My thing about Mbappe, and like, I wanted to bring this up because this is a guy who literally has 5 goals away from having the most goals ever in the World Cup history. Not Pele, not R9, not Van Basten, Mbappe. Like,
I'm not impressed by someone overtaking Miroslav Klose. I'm just not. Sorry. Oh,
I understand that. You are the greatest antagonist ever. Just trust me on that. If there's someone who can hate you and find hate in anything, it will be Dean. But
thank you.
What I'm saying is, for real, like, let's relax. It's a 26-year-old player who's won a World Cup, scored a hat trick in a World Cup final. Let's calm down a little bit about Mbappe, like, you know?
Here's the Mbappe point I want to make.
Yeah.
People realize that he scored 31 league goals this season, right?
In his
first season at Real Madrid. They won nothing. But he's not all of a sudden a bad player because he didn't win. He just had a losing season, I suppose, based on the expectations of his team. But him as a player, like, did he mess up the chemistry that other players had going? Yes. Did his team suffer because of it? Yes. Is he now a bad player? No, not at all.
Did he make that guy delete his account because he scored a free kick? Yes.
Did he put Guardiola in the dirt? Yes, he did that. I remember that. That happened this season, you know. But yeah, congratulations to the victors. That's all I got. That's all I got. Shout out QSG. You know, they did it. Finally. Yay. Yeah. And Inter, man. Let's just tear it down. It's time. Yeah. It's time. Let's get the young niggas in.
And at Cherby, it's been a good career, but call it.
You beat a lot of things, but you didn't beat your path to a Champions League final. You know, you even beat racism allegations, you know. So which to me is bigger than a Champions League final if you really think about it, you know. Like, no one thinks of a Serbia as a racist right now.
No. We got some quick bits for you guys. Conte staying at Napoli, thoughts?
A good thing. That must mean they're gonna spend money.
Yeah. come get Garnacho. We got something for you. And give us Osimhen. Gasperini is not going to Juventus. He's going to Roma to replace Ranieri. How do you feel about that?
That makes perfect sense because as Juventus are in the Champions League, so when I saw that he had those options, initially I thought to myself, I mean, it's Juventus. They're the biggest club in Italy, no matter what we say about them. But they've also been the most disorganized club in Italy for what feels like a decade at this point, ever since the Calciopoli thing, you know, like whether it's management, whether it's how often they fire coaches. I mean, they just fired the guy that fired Thiago Motta. So, you know, why would you want that job if you have the option of more stability at Roma, you know, where Claudio Ranieri has put them in a good spot, you know? So it's not Champions League, but he'll have fun there.
And Marco Silva's linked to Juventus.
I like that. I like that. I don't know if he's big enough for Juventus fans because they're a bit like, you know, I mean, they're the biggest club in their country. It's Juventus. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's big enough, but he's definitely good enough, I think. He's a good coach.
Allegri's back at Milan to replace Conceição. We knew Conceição was gone. That was a long time. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, what do Juventus do? Like we said, Marco Silva's linked, so we'll see what they do.
Why don't they just keep Tudor? They fired someone for him. He came in. He achieved the assignment. Like, why? Like, I never understood that. It's kind of like you guys getting rid of Van Nistelrooy mid-season when he could have just seen the season out. Then you bring Amorim in for the summer.
You know why? Galaxy brain. That's why.
It's crazy, man.
Insane. Yeah.
Leave Tudor there.
Yeah. Liverpool got a little bad for Trent. £10 million. So.
Oh, so does this mean would they now give him props now? They don't get to boo him anymore?
No.
Because that was the big issue, right? He's leaving for free. We're not making any money off him. All right, slave masters, you got your little 10 pounds or whatever. Congratulations.
You'll never walk alone or whatever they say. whatever it is, whatever gang said.
You never go window shopping alone.
Yeah, whatever. Leverkusen said $5 million for Jonathan Tah for the Club World Cup. So Leverkusen's playing hardball on Bayern Munich. They say, no, we're going to stand up.
Yeah, that seems fair. I mean, if Bayern won him a little earlier, they should pay for the privilege. I mean, apparently the winner of the Club World Cup makes $140 million. It's a big prize. So if you're getting that much money, a $5 million investment up front to maybe win it, it's probably worth it. I mean, Real Madrid just spent 10 on Trent.
Yeah. By the way, LAFC just qualified for the Club World Cup yesterday. Dennis Bouanga scored like the 115th minute. So they beat a Mexican team. So
America. Now, who did they beat exactly?
Club America.
Yeah. I was nice jerseys. Nice gowns.
Beautiful gowns. $130 million for Florian Wirtz.
Seems fair. He's that good. There are certain players we can all, I mean, agenda will agenda on the internet, whatever, but there are certain players you watch, and if you understand even the basic aspects of this sport, it makes sense that you spend that much money on them, you know. But not Moises Caicedo, not him.
Okay. So, Cesc is trying to leave Como, going to Leipzig.
That is his nature, man. Like, it seems like he has a good thing there. I feel like he should spend at least another year or two before. There'll always be jobs for someone as respected as him in the game. I don't understand why he's agitating so much. Like, surely he doesn't have a need for money. Fuck.
I mean, it's Cesc, you know. Pep Linders is going to Pep Guardiola.
And they are trying to create Pepe Soup. I don't know, man. I read fucking Pep Linders' book titled Intensity all those years ago, and there's a reason why he worked with Klopp. They seem to get along from a football aesthetic standpoint. I mean, there's not that much difference at the end of the day. Good players are good players, but I just don't. It'll be interesting to see what impact, if any, he has on Pep, put it that way, because I just feel like this won't last. It just doesn't make sense to me, man. It's interesting. Nice that he tried to coach on his own and accepted that, you know what, maybe I'm not that guy.
Two manly men just going at it.
These are not manly men. These are twerps. Neither one of them can outlift me. You're not a manly man if you can outlift little old me. Come on now.
I mean, there are very few people who can lift the size of Mushin. So. And last but not least, Manchester United have announced that they have signed Matheus Cunha officially. Thoughts on that?
Congratulations. He's a good player. It's probably a good value buy as well. It's been a while since I've seen United make a decision in the transfer market where I thought to myself, okay, that sounds about right from an expenditure standpoint. And I think if things go well, and obviously I hope they don't, but if things go well, this guy could be the equivalent of sort of like a Cantona type figure. Like he has that sort of aura about him, I think. And with the right coaching and the right support in other areas of the pitch, he could really do something for your club.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. He'll arguably probably be the best Brazilian to ever play for United if things go well. We've had about 9 Brazilians at this point.
He's no fucking Kleberson, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, he ain't no Kleberson. He ain't no Rodrigo Possebon either. So
he ain't even no fucking Jemba. Like, fuck out of here, bro.
Yeah, but we'll see how it goes, man. I'm nervously, cautiously optimistic about United. I said a whole lot of words that make no sense just now. A whole bunch of oxymorons. This is basically saying I'm being a bitch about my team. That's the long and short of it.
I thought you were saying United fans are all morons. I agree.
Me too. I didn't say it, but I agree.
All right, take us out of here, moron.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the Champions League review. Also, some quick notes. For myself, Tosin, we're out. This is Dean. Everyone take it easy. Dean.